Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Trying to build up more sales and distribution in America? Well, then happy holidays, everybody. We have your early Christmas gift here on the show, my friend Jimmy Olaher, who I met at a co-working space randomly a few years ago while traveling through New Jersey, and has been rocking with e-commerce and working really closely with a friend of mine, the Chinese designer David at GeekCook. I'm so happy he came on the show today to share, and let's get right into this one. Is this jam-packed with value and tips that he uses for building up B2B distribution and being very creative about it. Also, those interested in maybe finding a Chinese factory that wants to be a distributor, I always have Chinese companies contacting me looking for these people, and maybe you're inspired after hearing Jimmy. You can contact me at globalfromasia.com/episode64, and I'll have a list of different product lines you can look at and let me know if you're interested in any. Okay, let's jump into the show now. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have my friend Jimmy on the line. Thanks for being here, Jimmy.
Thank you. Thank you again.
Great.
Thank you for having me on.
No problem. We've known each other for years, and I'm really happy to get you on the show. Maybe first you can introduce yourself and your expertise.
My name is Jimmy Olaher. I'm big on into e-commerce, specifically business to business. And I actually got into e-commerce the first time I met Mike, and I met him. He introduced me to a manufacturer, and I've fallen in love ever since.
yeah, that was the funny. That was like 2.5 years ago or something, I think. More?
Yeah, I think maybe 3.5 now.
Wow, time is flying. Yeah. But yeah, I was back visiting the States. I kind of usually do once a year or so, and we met at a co-working space in New Jersey. What was that called? Mission? Is that still there?
Mission 50. Mission 50. Yeah, it's still there.
Okay, cool. Yeah. They were just opening like when we were there.
Yeah. And that was their first week of opening.
Oh, amazing.
They opened the doors. And since then, since meeting you there, I've been aside from being a champion of e-commerce and B2B business, I've been a champion of co-working spaces too, because of that magic can happen. You know, two entrepreneurs can just land in one space for
exactly.
Two different parts of the world and
create right.
a business that's ongoing.
And we randomly met
3 years on now, you know?
Yeah, we met there. We didn't plan to meet there. We just met there. That was really
exactly,
cool.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Cool. And also I just like to, maybe some listeners, if they're curious more about your story about that is, Terry Lynn has the, Build My Online Store podcast. You're on episode 8. So I'll link that in the show notes too. So people can get even more of that story. So that's GeekCook, right? And
yes,
maybe GeekCook. You can explain quickly GeekCook.
Okay. Right now we've actually changed the name to, here in the US, GeekCook is now known as Geek Supply Company, but originally we started off as GeekCook, then we turned the name into GeekCook USA. But what GeekCook is, fundamentally, I think we like to call ourselves a design house or a design business. We have this great designer, which Mike actually introduced me to, David, and he fabricates these crazy things that no one else can make, you know, which gives us that unique selling power because no one else can make what David makes. And we go ahead and we make a e-commerce business out of it. We are basically monetizing David's design experience, and we make products out of it, and we try to sell it internationally. GeekCook is the China aspect, and here we're called Geek Supply Company, powered by GeekCook.
Awesome. Great. And when we were planning to do the show, we kind of wanted to talk about both sourcing side and distribution side between US and China, or, you know, just more generally. And you kind of also said how you're not currently using traditional distributors. You find partners that are in B2B, like you said, that fit the brand and do distribution in-house. So can
exactly.
you, yeah, I mean, that sounds really cool. I'm curious to expand on that. Maybe you could give me some ideas.
So I'll even talk about why I even got into B2B exactly is because when I came into it, I came into it not knowing e-commerce as a whole. You know, you just introduced me into to a manufacturer, and you you pointed me in the right direction of partners I should look into, like companies like Fab, Touch of Modern. You, hey, I think you should reach out to these guys and sell our stuff. So as soon as I jumped in doing business to business. I'm actually learning how to do business to consumer now because, you know, I started doing business to business. And that's how it just started, just, you know, not knowing what to do with business to consumer and not knowing how to get a big audience to come to your website. We decided, hey, let's just, you know, sell this products we have to a company that already has the audience, that already has our audience, that loves well-designed, made, you know, well-designed stuff, you know, and that's how we decided to, you know, focus Geek Cook USA or Geek Supply as a business-to-business business is because we didn't have the audience. And we said, hey, let's find someone that has the audience and let's sell it to them. And that's how, and that's still the method I use to distribute our products today. We now have an e-commerce site, you know, so we do business to consumer now. We're ramping up our marketing and trying to do that whole, you know, e-commerce site thing. But honestly, the bulk of our business fundamentally is business to business. We won't have anything if we don't, you know, without selling to the partners we sell to. And so what I do is I think a great partnership has to work for both sides. You know, it has to be something. And at first, I didn't even understand that. You know, it takes so much time that you learn from the business and you learn why your partners are doing things they do. You know, because they also have to make money. At first, I wasn't seeing that side. I was like, you know, buy my product. But also, they have to make money now. So, for example, quantity is a big thing that, you know, dealing with specific partners, if you don't have enough quantity for them, they're not even going to, you know, want to look at you or do business with you. And those are things I didn't understand when I first started. So I usually, first of all, I'll try and find a parallel between both businesses. So let's use fab.com, for example. You know, they like unique things that was designed well. And that's what we're making. We're making unique things that you can't find on any other e-commerce store that was, believe it or not, designed well and designed in China. So that was, you know, it was low cost to make because it was being made in China, but it was being made at such a high quality that even Fab.com wanted to carry it. So you'll find the parallel, you know. So I wanted to do it, you know, business to business, and well-designed stuff. So I looked for an e-commerce company that already has the audience that's selling well-designed, unique stuff. And that's how I basically make partnerships. I see if the product is going to work with the business, you know, their model, their idea, you know, their culture, if there's a connection there. And I usually try, I personally do this myself. I reach out to all the partners we have, and I try to initiate something. And of course, we have people reaching back to us as well. Because at first it was all me reaching out. Then as soon as the brand started growing, you know, you have partners reaching out to you as well. And some partners would like specific products. Some products would do well with specific partners that, you know, that wouldn't do well with other partners. So it's up to you to just go out there and pick specific brands that have the same message as you do to try and at that time it was the perfect time when we both started. When you started introducing me was the flash sale site boom bubble. You know, so
yeah,
each site was looking for they were looking for something cool and new, and we were cool and new at that time. So it was so easy to make these partnerships. You know, we're talking to the merchandising manager of Fab.com on a daily basis like it was nothing, and obviously because of the tools we had, technology, email, LinkedIn. You know, so everything was, it was almost serendipitous. You know, it was the boom of flash sale sites. We had the right product at the right time. You know, our technology was making it easier to connect with other people. You know, most of the buyers I work with, I haven't even seen 50% of them. I've only, you know, interacted with them through my computer or through emails. I've never actually been, you know, in an actual room with them, which is actually something I'm trying to do now, which because I've noticed that also helps, you know, strengthen the relationship and the partnership because it's a business relationship, but honestly, it's more of a personal relationship. But, you know, people make so many decisions daily that some of their business decisions are swayed by their personal behavior, personal feelings of that person.
Definitely.
So I even try, now I try to be in the same room as my buyers. I try to meet them in person. I go to Christmas parties or brand parties. If Fab has a party, you know, Open Sky has a party, I'll try to be there because fostering this relationship is actually what keeps the partnerships going, because there's so many people making, trying to, you know, make it in e-commerce and in the B2B world, that there's so many people reaching out to them trying to sell stuff.
Sure.
That you have to be on their mind at all times. So I always try to, aside from sending them business emails, I also try to, you know, try and do something personally with them, like attending their parties or soon, or meeting them at a trade show or something, you know?
Awesome. So yeah, I was going to ask about trade shows. So you do attend some trade shows, or?
I've attended a couple, and I don't know. I think the jury is still out. I can't tell how successful it was for, you know, it was for the brand or for the business. I don't know if we're getting enough. You know, I don't think the business we get back as justified the upfront cost we have to pay for a trade show, because I think it's expensive, you know. And every time we've done it, I think we actually had to like split a booth because we couldn't afford to do a whole booth ourselves. And then we've had once when we've been invited to come and be at a lobby or come and display stuff, which wasn't a trade show, but. So I'm not positive on how effective it is. I don't know if it was the specific show we were at wasn't big enough, you know, but it's something I want to do again, probably do better than we did the first time. And maybe find another one to go to. But yeah, trade shows is something we want to definitely focus on or start doing more on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe you don't get direct sales. It might help for the branding and
for the brand, exactly.
And you get to meet the different buyers that you're talking to, maybe at the same time. Hopefully, do these distributors go there that you know? Or
yeah, exactly. That's where most of them go. That's another place to. Also, just to give them that, even if it's not fake, because you're there, give them that aura that you're a bigger brand yourself. They like to see the people they do business with, you know. Your emails can get you contracts and partnerships here and there. But at some point, if you want to start doing bigger things, bigger contracts, you know, it's some of these things that decisions that and things you talk about face to face rather than email, you know. So, and a trade show is a place where it's a perfect place for some that kind of magic to happen. And that's why we want to, you know, definitely start attending more.
Okay, cool. So we mentioned Fab and the flash sale craze. So I haven't been keeping up with it. Maybe what's I know there's been some news about them. What's up with Fab?
Yeah, I mean, Fab, basically, they grew extremely fast. You know, their founders were this, you know, go fast, guys. Things are about to break. And if things break, don't worry, we'll fix it. I won't just, you know, things are bound to break when you go fast. Those were the kind of founders they were. They raised a bunch of money. They bought a bunch of product, expanded to the US, expanded to, I mean, the UK, expanded to India. I think they still have Fab India open. And it was just one of those things that, you know, the flash sale thing was a bubble. They invested so much money in that business model, and it turns out it wasn't, you know, it wasn't here to stay. It was just another fad at the time. And they had to make some emergency cuts to save the business. So they had to fire almost half of their workforce. They had to close down some shops. They had to make drastic things to save the business. But ultimately, it looks like they're not going to be able to save the business. And I think the founder is switching it into a furniture company somewhat now. I think
crazy
somehow. Yeah, because they always wanted to. I remember at Fab, when we reach out to them to sell them our stuff, I could just tell more and more that, you know, these guys are going to produce their own products. You could see the founder talking about it. And of course, that's good for them. But for their partners, it's not that great.
Yeah.
And you could tell that's where the business was going, because they could make more money that way. You know, if they make the products in-house and they sell it, you know, the price range is the price range would be a lot better for them. And that's what they decided to do. They started making furniture and other stuff in-house. And now they're going to go, I think they're going to double down on that and actually base the whole business and sell Fab to another company and base and use the assets of what they have now and start a new thing. And I think they already actually started. I think it's called Hem, but they're based in somewhere in Europe right now. And that's, Fab's no longer.
Crazy. Well, at least you got to You got to take advantage of it when it was hot, right? So it's good.
I'm not upset. Some people are upset at the founder. You know, it's his business. You know, he can do whatever he pleases to do with it. I'm happy I got the opportunity to work with companies like Fab.com, you know?
Yeah.
Just having that, you know, that metric, you know, that vanity metric or that vanity to say that we worked with Fab has been, you know, has helped us even get more partners, you know?
Great.
So we use it as, you know, some kind of social proof or clout that, you know what we're doing. We've done businesses with big e-commerce companies before. And I'm happy that we got the opportunity to do it. I'm happy it was there, you know?
Awesome. So yeah. I don't want to give up trade secrets, so you don't have to answer everything, but maybe your process for finding a partner, like maybe from, you mentioned LinkedIn, is that one? Or
LinkedIn is one I definitely strongly recommend. Well, now it's so much easier because at first, even back then, 2 or 3 years ago, they were like, you know, every other week there was a new e-commerce or a new flash sale company out there coming out, you know? So I had this thing, this automatic thing that I'll do. I can't remember how I set it up. I think I used IFTTT through something. But we'll go on this website and we'll do something like we'll search. We'll put this keyword companies like Fab.com, and every week or every end of the day, we'll get like a printout or an email of companies. You know, and the way the system does it, it picks up on the keywords. You know, so new, unique, geek. On gifts for unique gifts, all that stuff. It picks up all the keywords and it, you know, we get a sites like that back to us on our side. And, you know, I'll go through it and I'll see which one is actually a real business that's worth, you know, reaching out to. It's as simple as just finding someone that you think might like your product. This is basically what I do. I do it personally. I'll look for a business that I think I like. Might like that product. I'll look for their contact email and I'll hit contact. So most of them already have a partnership link to make it easy for, you know, for partners like us to reach out to them. And most of them just have a contact us link there, and I'll send them an email. Is that, you know, a quick, you know, short email that's scannable that you can read instantly, because we all know people's attention, especially when you're using the internet, is so slow. So, you know, I never write those big block 3-paragraph email. It's just something as simple as, hey, you know, I think, you know, there might be parallels here. Take a look at this. Here's more info if you need to contact me. You know, something fast that someone can look at and reply to ASAP. Send them that. And usually within a week, half the time, 70% of the time, I'll hear something. Yeah, we're interested, or no, we're not interested. And the other 30% I don't hear stuff from, I'll keep going back to them until I get an actual no, you were not interested. Then awesome. I'll leave them. If they don't respond to me, they're still on the list, you know. And then we have those other companies that reach out to us too, which has been so cool and just makes me happy that, you know, we're actually building a business here. People actually like our stuff, because the first year it was like, I remember telling you all the time, you know, the businesses I can reach up to, I can hit up, you know.
Yeah,
it was us just reaching out. Now we have a nice, you know, influx of businesses looking to partner with us as well, so that takes the pressure off me.
That's great.
From not getting more business. Yeah,
that's great.
And that's another way I want to build the business as well. I just want to, you know, build a system where everyone follows my system and have another, you know, business development manager.
Yeah,
you know, that does the same thing. I just have a couple of business development people. We have we're doing things now that we couldn't do before. We now have full-time writers on staff, a full-time web development guys that handle the websites. And now that we have that foundation, now we're going to build out the sales team and build out the business development team. And that's the hardest part that I've been so hard to let go, because 2 years ago, I was doing everything myself. You know, I hired someone to do the website. I hired a writer. I hired everyone. But now that I had to slowly let go. And that's, you know, when the business starts getting better and bigger, when you let go of things that slow you down. And so I can focus on the things I know how to do best. I know how to find businesses that love our product. That's what I'm good at, you know. But I had to take myself away from doing all these other things. So I had to take myself away from the SEO and the writing. I got a writer.
Great.
I had to take myself away from the development. I got a web developer, you know. So now the hardest part is I'm still doing all the sales and business development myself. It's my baby. So that's the hardest thing to let go of. And honestly, I've actually tried, but it's been so hard. I've had so many people come on board as a salesperson or a business development person. And, you know, they'll try for like a couple of weeks. They don't get anything and they give up, or someone will get something. They'll get a nice contract or a contingent PO. And they get excited. Oh, I got a PO. But I'm like, listen, it's a contingent PO. So it's based off whatever they sell.
Yeah.
Then it turns out they only sell one iPhone case and they get disappointed and they never come back, you know? So that's been the hardest part to let go of. And not even let go of, to actually be successful at getting the right salesperson.
Well, yeah.
So that's where we'll work.
It's really valuable. I mean, that's a really good skill that you have, and it's hard. It's actually, a lot of business say that's the most important. I mean, of course, everything's important in business, but you know, I think getting deals in is really, of course, critical, especially in B2B. So
that's been the hardest part. So I've been trying to let go. I mean, even when I do let go, the person they always get always turns out they can't handle the pressure, or they can't, you know, they get disappointed because of the amount they, you know, the deal they worked out the first time wasn't lucrative enough for them. But that's part of business development. You know, you have to continue building relationships, and it's not going to turn to sales like that. That's one thing I try to preach, is the difference between business development and sales, and is which I want everyone to focus on, or more of a business development mindset rather than a sales mindset, because the sales is a one-time thing. Mm-hmm. You're just collecting transactions. But business development, I feel like you're collecting relationships, and those are so much more valuable and lucrative, you know, when they actually pay out.
Definitely. I mean, it's like long-term value, especially for B2B, and you know, you have to keep your relationships strong, and then they remember you and like you, right? To order from you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Exactly. Cool. So, you know, we mentioned before the show, we were talking about not using traditional distributors, and you're finding these like newer, like flash sites and other like online distributor partners, but you then mentioned you might look into traditional again. Maybe go through some thought process of it.
One thing I've learned is distributor, and the best thing about, you know, experience is, I feel like the best experience you can get is like learning on the job. You know, I never went to when I started businesses, as you know, I was a software guy, you know, so Bagger Rider, my first business was, you know, everything was all software. I didn't know anything about merchandising. I didn't know anything about FOB, free on board, all that stuff, shipping. I literally learned everything on the job. So that's the one thing I'm learning about distributors too. I didn't even know this. I'm content. We're very content with just, you know, doing the distributing in-house, you know, doing it myself. And a couple of people reached out to me and said, why don't you try to reach out to a distributor? They already have all these relationships that you're trying to build with these buyers. They already have them down pat, you know, because they work with them every day, you know? So why don't you just reach out to one of them and, you know, try and sell your products to one of that, you know, through one of those avenues. And I reached out to a distributor. Everyone that sees our product always falls in love at first, you know. And I gave him, I think our SKU here in the, especially for Geek Supply, our SKU, I'll give it about maybe top 45 pieces here in the US. Okay. 45. And I thought that was a lot, you know, 45 pieces. And I kept on reaching out to this guy. Hey, what's up? You know, what's going on? You know, why aren't you responding to my, he wasn't basically responsive, you know, and Then I reached out to someone else, the guy that introduced me to the distributor who does rugs. He's a rug guy and he sells like thousands of SKUs of rugs. And I think that's where the difference is because they get paid, you know, they get paid on the amount of stuff they have to sell. So, you know, it's another thing I didn't even know. You always have to think about the other side, what they have to do and how they're going to make their money. Why will he waste time, you know, working with a guy that only has 45 SKUs when he can work with a guy that has 10,000 SKUs, you know, and get more money that way? So I kept on, you know, wondering. I got that feeling that I'm not his priority, or I'm not even on his radar at all, you know. And that's another reason why, is because we're a smaller company, you know. We're still a startup, you know, and we don't have that many SKUs because of the kind of products we make. You know, we make with eco-friendly products like bamboo. Stuff that can mass produce. I mean, you can mass produce it, but you can't mass produce it on a, you know, on an insane level, like any, like bamboo, I mean, like a plastic. So we don't have that many SKUs. And this is why this, that's why, you know, the distributor will rather work with, you know, a company that has a bigger product line than mine, you know. So that's another reason why we work in-house, is because I don't think any distributor will take us seriously unless they know exactly how to move SKUs. They know who to get, because it takes time. You know, it takes time, you know, finding the right product match with another company, and, you know, but everything takes time. So this guy's just a distributor, just rather work with someone that knows this. And if I know, if I work with a guy that has 10,000 products rather than the guy that has 45, I'm going to make, get more money, obviously, because this guy has 10,000. So that's another thing. He also, I didn't know that at first. I didn't know that distributors work that way, or rather work with, you know, companies that have a bigger inventory than a smaller one. So if you're a small, you know, if you're a small shop, that's why another reason, you know, doing the distributing in-house isn't such a bad thing. And you get to keep 100% of the of your revenue if you don't have any licenses or any other thing you have to pay for.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not currently in the bar products business now, but dealing with so many SKUs or SKUs is really a nightmare to manage the inventory.
Yeah.
Because I'm also ready to ask you about, you know, the terms. You mentioned FOB, which is, you know, maybe you can mention some terms what normally you do with these B2B deals. Like, because I think that was a struggle I always had, was I had to finance the inventory and pay for the warehousing. And, you know, maybe you can give some examples of some of these structures of the deals you do.
Yeah. Man, so some of the stuff, and it's a pain point, especially when you're the smaller partner. You know, when you're just getting your foot in the door, you have to bend over to the terms of the bigger guy. You know, which of course you know you're happy you're getting a contract in the first place, so you shouldn't complain. But it just hurts you in so many ways if you don't work the term out right. That is, there's no point in doing business. You know, one of our big partners is Amazon through Wood.com. They sell a bunch of our stuff. They sell continuously. They sell our Star Wars stuff. They sell a bunch of stuff. But the only one of their terms is their payment terms they don't like. So one of the things we schedule is on the partnership side with the partners, it's usually payment terms is most of the times they usually want us to do the shipping. So it's drop shipping. So that, you know, saves time and saves them money. And payment terms, ideally, with Fab. Fab was another business that paid us fast. They had 15 days payment terms. And what we do is 30 days, but we'll give it to us at 60 days.
Yeah.
And that will kill us. You know, we won't get the money. You know, I mean, for the big businesses that have so much working capital, it's not a problem, but we're a small team. You know, we have like a small team of 4, 5, 6 people in the winter when we get really busy. You know, so everything, every penny is very important. Every dollar is important. So when they decide to give us terms that, you know, 60 days net terms and all that, it hurts us because it just takes so long to get the money back. With that money, should have gone out and made new products already, you know? So it slows us down, especially when we have multiple deals in line.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That. But those are some of the terms we'll get from the partnership side. It's usually 30 days payment. Sometimes it's drop shipping. Sometimes they want us to ship the whole thing wholesale to their house and to their warehouse, and they take care of the shipping. On the manufacturing side, it's always, I think it's always free on board coming from factory price. They'll give you that factory price, and you have to work it with your. It depends on how much stuff you're ordering. I still do air freight till this day, which is very, very, which costs us a lot more money because I should do more sea freight. But we're trying to figure out. I don't know if I told you we're moving, which is another story. I'll tell you off the podcast. We're moving personally, but the business has to move as well. Yeah, the business has to move as well. So we don't have a permanent warehouse yet. So I can't order as much. I can't buy, and we can't order products as much as we'd like to, because we're going to move any within the span of 6 months anytime now. So that's just been holding us back. And it's another thing that, so we keep spending money, reordering reordering through FedEx, and that causes the logistics to be so expensive. That's what we're using right now. So the terms with that manufacturer, which of course, you know, is David, it's the same one we've had on time. We got very lucky, you know, with you introducing us to, they do so much. They do the packaging too. They do the, sometimes they even do the photography. But if it's a product that we've specifically designed here for the US, we'll have to take the photography here. But if it's a Geek Cook product that they sell there themselves, they've already done the photography, they've already done the packaging, and they'll send it here directly to my front door, literally, and we'll take it to the warehouse and we'll store it there.
So yeah, just, I think listeners understand these terms, but like FOB means free on board, which is from that port. Yeah. So if it's FOB China, then the shipping has to be paid.
They have to pay it up at China.
Yep.
They pay for the shipping.
Yep. And then I guess the net 30 or the net terms means after it's been received by the buyer or shipped from, maybe you can clarify. So how you do net.
The net is usually, what I do is, I don't know if I'm actually doing it right, but after the last day they receive the invoice, it's basically the amount of days they're going to pay you.
Yep.
So if it's net 30, that means they're going to pay you when they receive the invoice in 30 days. If it's net 15, they're going to pay you in 15 days, 60 days. And they have stuff like net 30 minus 2% or something. So if you want it in, net 15 minus 2%. So that means they can give it to you in 15 days, but they'll take 2% of the PO basically to cover their merchant costs because they're going to use a credit card to pay you.
Got it.
So they have all that cool, tricky stuff like that. What else? Net, free on board. Let me bring out a PO and see if I can see any cool terms that we can quickly discuss.
So yeah, like, is there a contract too, sales contract, or is it just a invoice, PO, email, or?
There's a sales contract. There's a big contract at first that you have to sign when you become a partner with most of these businesses. And it's just basically stuff that covers each other's asses, you know. Excuse me, my friend.
Don't worry,
that covers both your side. You know, just stuff about, especially the flash sale guy. They have a lot of stuff in there that if you ship the stuff late, you know, that they're going to take, they have a certain amount of dollar they're going to deduct for every day you're late. You know,
got it.
So basically they have it's just a bunch of terms that you have to agree with in relations to what kind of product you sell. Then now they have all the government stuff in there again, like the Proposition 60, I think it's 68 for California, making sure every product doesn't have any trace of lead in it.
Got it.
You have to certify that, you know, your products are having. So they give you all that stuff to cover themselves. And it's most of the time it's stuff that, you know, your manufacturer has already taken care of, you know, before they even make the stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know when I got that. I was freaking out. Oh my God, does this? I'm like, of course this is, you know, this doesn't have lead in it. We can't make it if it has, you know, we're not allowed to even ship it.
Got it.
To you guys if it has lead in it. So most of the time your manufacturer is already, if you have a good manufacturer, and if you're, you know, it depends on the type of business you're trying to build. You know, you can get crappy stuff online, you know, and if you know you want to get the good stuff, you know, you could get the good stuff too.
Sure.
And most of the time, the good guys are doing it the good way. That's going to, you know, keep, you know, children, whoever is buying your product, you know, protected from all these things they want them to be protected from.
And then for the payment, when they pay you on that 15 or 30 days after, it's is it check or is it a bank wire or
So they give you that option. They give you that option. Some people will give you the option to do a PayPal direct to your bank, check. And I do a mix of both depending on the partner. Sometimes I like just receiving the old school paper check in the mail just because, you know, it's still cool. I like keeping the stubs.
Yeah, sure.
And some partners will just, you know, deposit it directly into your account. Like we have, especially if I'll talk about this in a little bit about, you know, what happened, how our business is now. After the whole flash sale, what we do now is now we partner with more e-commerce focused sites. I'm not just, you know, doing sales anymore. Another thing that has been is big right now. I think it's almost a new flash sale bubble is marketplaces. There's so many marketplaces and there's so many popping up, you know, left, right, and center. There's Vaults, Open Sky, Rakuten. You know, we were on Rakuten. We actually had to terminate our contract with Rakuten because it was just such a hassle working with them. You know.
Yeah, they don't know. They're Japanese, right? I think, but
yeah, they're Japanese, but they actually made a pretty big investment here in the U.S. So they bought Buy.com first of all. I'm sure you knew about that. They bought Buy.com.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
And they converted buy.com to rakuten.com. Then aside from buy.com, they bought this other cool startup that started up in out in the West at San Francisco, Vault. They bought Vault as well. So that they became a pretty big player in the marketplace niche here in the US, and we were on there for a while. But it was, I don't know if they're still getting used to their system here, but it was taking them so long to get back to their vendors or get back to me. I don't know if it was just me, but that's another thing you always have to think about. This marketplace is they also work with a bunch of vendors, bigger vendors than you that, you know, like I'm sure they were probably working with Nike too, you know, and they have to come back and deal with small companies like us. So I was just tired of being, I don't know if it was just them being so slow, but we'll make all these changes. And, you know, we wanted to do this big Black Friday thing with them and they'll tell us to make all these changes and we'll make it. And before it gets implemented on their side, you know, it takes like 2 days and that work has gone. And then we've lost, you know, that Black Friday audience we wanted to, because selling on the marketplace is different from selling on the flash sale site, you know, because on the marketplace, your product can just go there and die. No one will ever see it. So you have to make an announcement when you come. So we're planning to launch with this big Black Friday sale they were having, but they were just too slow and they just didn't take us seriously. So I was like, listen, if we're not going to, you know, you guys are not taking us seriously, I don't think we can, you know, do business. And actually they, I got tired of it. I just got fed up because a bunch of, you know, especially when you're building a brand, a smaller brand, and you're working with big, and this is another, I guess, pearl of B2B business. You're kind of at the mercy of your partners, really, you know, where they want to place you, what you want to do, how many you want to buy. And this is why we're heavily focusing on building our new, our own e-commerce site. I mean, we already have our site, but our own e-commerce audience is because I'm just tired of, you know, dealing with partners. Like, especially if you're the small guy, they just treat you like crap sometimes. So sometimes you just have to put your foot down. So I'm like, listen, you guys have treated us like crap. I think, and the annoying thing is I paid, you know, aside from making it so hard to come on your platform. But the funny thing is when they recruit all these brands that they want and they like to get on their platform, they, you know, there's someone always there to respond to your email. And as soon as you give them that check and you do that exchange before the merchant response team or whatever they're called comes to your site, yeah, and it takes forever. So I was just so upset that they were so fast to get us on the platform.
Yeah, yeah.
But when they got us on the platform, they kind of forgot about us. They had to, they, you know, I work with Brit & Co as well, which is another pretty cool startup in San Francisco. And they also launched a marketplace. And you should have seen their marketplace is awesome, but they treat everyone the same. You know, the big guys to the small guys, you know, they treat everyone the same, give everyone the same respect. You know, they, as soon as you want something, they look at it, they do it. If they can't do it, they tell you you can't do it. So also, it also depends on, you know, you can pick your partners as well. You know, you get to pick people you want to work with. And of course, you can be like me and decide, because I know Rakuten would be a good place for Geek Supply, because I feel like we can sell some stuff on there. But I just don't think it's I feel like it's gonna get me mad the way their turnaround time. I don't know if it's just because we're a smaller brand or just because they just launched here in the US and they're still figuring out what their processes are.
Sure, I think.
But that's another platform we use. That's not when marketplace started. When flash sale sites died, we started selling on marketplaces, started doing more traditional e-commerce B2B, selling to more bigger brands to buy at once, you know?
Sure.
And then it's more sustainable that way because, you know, you can't keep doing flash sales forever. You know, it kind of forced us to grow up. The whole flash sale thing was a nice train that everyone was riding for a while, you know? If your business didn't even have a name, if you had products, you could buy products anywhere and put it on a flash sale site. So I'm kind of happy the whole bubble has burst because it was kind of, you know, it was kind of crazy for a little bit there. And it's kind of forced a lot of businesses to grow up, you know, listen and to decide, hey, is this what I want to do? Is this what, do I want to be an e-commerce company? Do I want to sell products to people or do I want to sell, you know, to businesses and to make your decision there, you know? So it was a bit hard a little bit because it was a nice chunk of our business,
yeah,
doing flash sales every other day. But now we focus more on, you know, more more e-commerce companies that have a traditional e-commerce business model, you know, more marketplaces, which has been massive for us. We also sell on Grand Street, which is another cool marketplace that got bought out by Etsy. There, it's basically like the electronics of Etsy. We sell there as well. And we just find partners like that basically do the same thing we want to do, you know, have the same core values, design-wise, I'm not even design-wise, culture-wise, philosophy-wise, and that's been working for us.
That's great. That's great. Awesome, man. That's been a really great talk, and I'm sure listeners got a lot. It's, you know, I want to maybe get towards the end here, and so maybe we can just plug your current websites and businesses, and listeners, I'm sure, may want to reach out to you with questions or feedback. So how can they do that?
Yes, you can reach me at Jimmy, J-I-M-I, at geeksupply.co. That's my email, Jimmy at geeksupply.co. Or you could just link up with me on Twitter. My Twitter is my last name, J. Mike, can you link that in the email? I mean, in the...
Yeah, thing? Sure. I'll put all that on the notes in the show so people can get to it.
And I also, aside from Geek Supply, I just recently did this menswear. I got totally in love with the e-commerce process and the B2B process and just our whole business. And I don't know if I have the weight. Now, what we do now is all my e-commerce business, we donate some of our profits, 10% of our profits to a sickle cell charity. So we're now trying to be, you know, have a social good attached to us, not just for the coolness of it or not just to get more sales, because I actually have sickle cell and it's something that's passionate about.
Sure.
And we noticed just, you know, doing all this, you know, it's giving our company a new mission, you know, just to create awareness for this disease. So what I've done is, aside from Geek Supply donating 10% to sickle cell charity, is I also started another brand, A Geek and a Gentleman, keeping it in the geek theme, A Geek and
awesome.
A Gentleman.
I like it.
Yeah. Another thing I'm passionate about is menswear. So we do a menswear with a little bit of geek in it.
Cool.
And you can check that out at geekandgentleman.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. We'll link that all up in the notes so people can check it out and contact you. So thanks so much, Jimmy. And
thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on. I love coming on here, you know, talking to you guys about e-commerce, especially, you know, I feel like China gets a lot of bad rap, you know. I'm one of the people that had a good experience with it, you know, so I always love coming and talking about how it's not that bad if you have the right people. Like, you know, you introduced me to the right manufacturer, and look, everything has been wonderful ever since then. It was thanks to you, which I think you actually spun into a business, which is almost social agents.
Yeah, it's connecting companies and agents together.
Exactly.
So
being an advocate for a company here and another company in China, you just have to find the right person to do it, man. China is not as bad as anyone, you know, say. I mean, you live there, so I'm sure you know.
Yeah,
you know,
so the advantage is, of course, I get to more easily see who's real and not, you know, but it's still hard to scale that, you know. It's been hard, but I'm really happy it's worked out. It's really, really, really amazing, and I'm so happy. I have to catch up soon. So
definitely, man. Thank you so much. Hopefully we can chat soon, and hopefully you'll be in the US soon, sometime soon, bro.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Last time the snowstorm made us meet each other.
Yeah, I know. I'll get there soon.
And I really wanted to say congratulations. I wanted to start the podcast off by saying congratulations on the exit, man. I mean, you are the one of the person that out of everyone I know, that hardest working person I know. You deserve it so much, man. Congratulations. Oh,
thanks, buddy. Thanks. Yeah, it's been a long ride and still a long way to go, but I'm excited to have merged with this company and have more creative juices to work with. So it's great.
Awesome. Awesome.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. It's really always amazing to me that we met at the Mission 50 co-working space, and he saw a catalog from Geek Cook that I brought from China, and it's gotten to be so great. Really did a good job, Jimmy, and it's amazing. I'm also interested, maybe I can help match some more people up with some Chinese distributors and creative people I know here. I've been in China even longer since then. So if you're interested, maybe in the new years in 2015, you want to try to find a new product, I can try to help match you up with a factory or distributor in China that's looking for partners in America. So maybe let me know, reach out. Some of the product lines that I know are women's sandals, sofa coverings and home goods, Bluetooth headphones and other electronics, camera bags and cases, portable batteries. It's just a few. Maybe if you're interested in something else, I know lots of Chinese factories and suppliers for many years. And, you know, I'm not just going to randomly connect you. I will want to kind of get to know you a little bit more before I match you with these suppliers, because they aren't just random people I know off Alibaba. They're people I know and I have good relationships with. So go to globalfromasia.com/episode64 if you're interested. And there's going to be a download link for the list and a way to reach out and get this process started. Also, enjoy the holiday season. Stay warm. Appreciate the people and things around you. I've been trying to be more positive around myself and people around me the past few months, and this really seriously helped me in business and in life. So let's all just try to keep doing that, okay? Take care.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.